All right, thank you, Richard. Yeah, I know I worked with that leaf hairiness project and thought it was going to be simple and got a lot of variability there. I just wanted to spend a short amount of time with you today to talk about kind of follow up on what Dale was doing and some of the programs that we initiated to work with both ginners and growers on helping to reduce plastic contamination. This wasn't done by just myself, but I had support from Cotton Incorporated and John Deere, National Cotton Ginners and National Cotton Foundation to kind of put together a training session that would identify some of the issues and help both from a ginner and a producer standpoint to reduce the incidence of plastic contamination in our cotton. And we were strictly focusing on the round module systems at the time. Of course, all of us are kind of amazed how fast the John Deere 7760 came into being as far as, introduced in, 07. And now it's running a very high percentage of our cotton that we're seeing harvested here in the United States. The systems have evolved over time, as producers and ginners have adopted this technology. They've incorporated and discovered new methods and ways of handling the round module. And I guess in this program, I kind of identified several of them. Again, I'm not going to go through them one by one. But the types of systems they're using is really quite unique. And I'm probably convinced we haven't seen the final system out there yet. I think we're going to have someone there with a new mousetrap that might even come up with something better. But there is a whole wide a range and array of different equipment being used. Again, in this program, we talk about, producers and workers being vigilant, making sure that if plastic is released in the field, that they get it out. If they have damaged bales, round modules, to repair those bales in the field. And make sure that when you're handling the round modules in the field, you get them up high enough that the cotton stalks are not scraping away at them and this sort of thing. And so we go into a little bit of that training. I'm kind of amazed how they're able to handle these round modules, especially when sometimes the wrap doesn't work. And even though the 7760 is a pretty good machine, it doesn't work perfectly all the time, and sometimes it just spits out a round module that doesn't have a wrap on it, and so or something doesn't stick. And so they're able to come pick that up and try to get that into gin the best way they can. But probably the key thing is really making sure that everybody's on the same page and they realize how important it is to properly handle these round modules. Here's a couple of slides on as far as infield staging, making sure the alignment is correct, making sure that the modules are not too close for a couple of reasons. Of course, if you get them too close, moisture will build up in between them, and then you'll start getting some degradation of the color in the cotton. Also, when you're picking the modules up, you pick them up at an angle, and so as you pick them up, you put more stress onto that plastic wrapping material, and then the module truck can cause damage to it when it picks up a lot easier. So encourage folks to space them apart, allow for air circulation and proper alignment. It always was painful for a lot of the ginners when it came to making sure that they had their module trucks in proper order to handle the round modules. Many of them had to go in and modify their chain beds with more smooth lugs and not near the aggressive lugs that we use with conventional models. Also, changing out the wheel lugs at the end of the module, making sure they were smooth, paddle wheel style, this sort of thing. A little bit on module truck trainers not running the module into the headboard, not dragging those chains across the modules that will rip them and this sort of thing. And then making sure that they're properly, when they're put onto the module feeder, that no damage to the plastic occurs there. just little things like that that can help to prevent the damage to the wrap, and then also the chance of that getting into the gym. Talk a little bit about transporting around modules to the gym, and again, we've seen a lot of variability. Of course, the biggest majority of people still use module trucks. I think that's the most common, and handle them in four. But we see a lot of folks in our area and some others that have adopted these flatbed low boy trailers, where they're able to really stack quite a bit of cotton on there, be able to carry some pretty large loads, and they're also able to carry it some pretty far distances. Unwrapping systems, and again, every gin is probably unique, just like in their whole ginning system, and so most of them have adopted different methods. We have automated, semi-automated, and manual systems. You get a look at it here. But before I get into that, I want to talk a little bit about the plastic wrap. I guess most of you know how it's put together. It really consists of two sections. The first section, which is what kind of the inner part, and which is located right in here, is just a polyethylene plastic material. It's tapered so it feeds into the feeder when the module is being constructed, and then once you get a complete wrap on it, you get the second section to come on, and the second section has an adhesive on it, and that's what binds all those different layers of plastic together. So you can get up to 3 to 4 layers of plastic that create that structural component that holds the ram module together and allows you to move it as you need to. And then, of course, it has what they call the Z-lock or whatever that ties it together at the very end. So there's two sections to that module. And of course, what we were seeing in the gins, and Dale mentioned some of this as well, is that if you don't cut the round module in the right spot, if you don't cut the plastic in the right spot, there's a good chance to get what we call this inner tail. And you can see that red zone right in here. This is the first section, or the inner section of the cotton, of the wrap. And if it's cut in the wrong spot, it basically can float loose from all the rest of the wrap and possibly get into the gin. So we've kind of got this designated here, the green area, which is called the safe cutting zone. And most of y'all can recognize that, the what they call the label or the tag that's on the white module. It's basically 180 degrees or opposite of that safe cutting zone. Here's kind of a lay down of what the wrap looks like when it's cut, and here's a kind of a picture or dramatization of the inner tail. And if it's not cut in the right spot, the tail can get loose into the plastic. The RFID tag, which is the locator tag, is around 24 inches from the end of the wrap. And this is what some of the module openers are sensing on to try to find out where is the proper cut. You want to cut opposite of where that RFID tag is. A little bit on the systems. This is the Stover sensor system. It uses an RFID tag reader with an automated cutting. I guess one of the things that we've seen in so many of the gins now is they're not using the RFID tag reader. Most of them are just making a cut. They know where the tag is, and so they're going opposite of that. And then they can spin that module to make sure they don't have any fugitive plastic in the system. The spider system, pretty popular system right here, it does, has a reader as well, looking for the proper place to cut that. You can see that since everything's cut at the bottom and it comes out, there, if you do get plastic in there, it'd be really difficult to get out. So most people really pay attention to where they're cutting it with this system here. And then this is Cherokee Roundup system, automated lift and dump. And this system here doesn't cut the plastic at all. So it picks it up, turns it 90 degrees, and then allows it to, by just letting off on the hydraulic pressure, dump the cotton out of the system. And then we have a different semi-automated systems. This is the Lipsy lifter system here. Basically comes in sausage style, and then the edges are trimmed, the plastic is pulled back, it's flipped up on its end, and then kept kind of intact. And I guess, you know, the bad system on this is you cut it twice, and so you're always going to basically cut it in the wrong spot. But the good thing is you don't ever cut it completely through. Most people cut it about 2 feet above the top, and then they wrap it up, create a bonnet, and then as it gets closer to the module feeder, they pull that cover off. Manual unwrapping systems, of course, here. It does take a lot of operator input to it, but it can be easily done. No really special equipment required as far as getting the module properly located. You stand it on its end like that, and then basically remove the plastic. Orientation, most gens I've seen have really liked the sausage style. That seems to feed the gen better, more uniform feeding, but there's several different ways people have compensated for that, and it works out pretty good. Like I said, and follow up with Dale said, the key is, of course, trying to keep the plastic out of the gen. You see this picture right here, and for you genners, you know what that is. And you can see the material that's all built up along the feeder cylinders there. Lots of plastic. Basically, it's all coming from our round module system. How that got there, you know, who knows? The operators say they didn't see anything, but somehow it gets into the system. Here's a situation where we made a cut, yet we still have a lot of fugitive plastic on there. So bottom line is, you know, training is important. Proper handling procedures, proper construction of that module in the field is critical. Making sure that management starting at the top is concerned about plastic contamination, and then of course working down to your worker training and proper safety methods are used. Again, let me thank Cotton Incorporated, National Cotton Council, National Cotton Gender Association, John Deere and Company for helping put together this. This series is available, and it's on, and this is something that Cotton Incorporated worked on called the Plant Management Network Focus on Cotton series. And you can go to this website right here, which is a pretty long website name. So if you email me, I'll be glad to send it to you. Or if you just Google Plant Management Network, you'll come up with it. But this has this whole slide set in it, in a narrative. It's about 20 minutes long, and you can sit down with management, you can sit down with your workers and kind of go through that and be a useful training tool. That's all I have, Richard. If there's any quick questions, I'll be glad to take them. If not, thank you very much.
Good job. Appreciate it, Tom. As always, good presentation. Alrighty. Now, if we've got the panel discussion, so if I could, our panel members, four panel members, we've got Jimmy, come up. Dwayne, y'all come on up to the front. Jonathan, Brad. All right, they're making their way to the table. The past several years, some genders have faced some quality issues such as increased leaf, seed coat fragments, and bark calls. We asked the next four genners to discuss what they are doing at their gen to address these quality issues. And changes are often made on a number of factors, so we're very, very interested in what these genners are doing and to address the quality concerns. So, Jimmy, you want to start?
Yes, Jim. Appreciate it. Yeah, thank you, Richard.
And, I was going to do a PowerPoint, but I couldn't get Sid to help me do it, so I've got a few notes here on my big chief tablet. But, you know, quality cotton ginning is something all of us really stress for, and it starts with actually, you know, in our situation where we're in the Gulf Coast and we have a lot of rain from time to time, hurricanes come in and what have you, but educating our producers on when to pick and when not to pick and what kind of moisture to pick with, and you know, make sure the cotton's dry is a big, big point. Defoliation, of course, we've all heard this. Defoliation makes a big, big part of it, and of course, you know, you very seldom see hairy leaf varieties anymore. You know, it just people just don't label it that way. It's semi smooth most of the time, but it's pretty hairy as we've already seen. We, of course, some of the bigger problems that we have is the varieties today. And I'll say this from the start. Galen, we probably need to do a study on seed size, because every one of us, and I've talked to some of the Jenners in the Mid-South and all last night, Richard last night, that we're all having problems with seed going through the grid bars, lots of them. The seed are just so small. Of course, we have great turnout because we have light seed weights, but that sure makes for seed coat nibs and some staining in the cotton from time to time. We started on a gin last year. We took over gin at Danabang, and we started changing it up. We did a lot of stuff on the front end, but basically was not real happy with what we were doing. So this year, actually, we went in and added Marsh Demerara 3, which actually has sensors throughout the gin that monitors the moisture of the cotton and controls our heaters. If we need heat, we get it. If we don't, we don't. And we go from our hot box through collider dryers, and we like collider dryers. We think it single locks cotton and gets cotton with the correct heat and CFMs. We're able to really dry the cotton here, and you're not going to clean it if you don't dry it. And of course, one of the things we strive for is to have the lint at 6.5-7% at the gin stand. Sometimes you can't attain that because it may come in at 4 or 5. In that case, we shut down the heaters. The Marsh Demerara 3 is pretty neat. It really does a good job, I feel like, handling the turning our heat up and down so we're not over drying. And what I really wanted to accomplish is to take the ginner out of the gin, controlling the gin, because many years back, before we had all these controls, you know, I would tell these guys, I want this moisture 6.5-7% of the gin stand, and sure enough, it'd be that way, you know. And if I just happened by the gin at 2 in the morning, guess what? Heat was up 350 and the cotton was down to 4%, and the guys ginning cotton like heck. So never had a way to really check what they were doing time and time again. So we did install, probably one of the first gins in the state to install, the Ooster IntelliGen system, which monitors the moisture, incoming moisture and incoming trash. And I will say this, you know, how many of you come in and had a producer say, hey, why is my turnout so bad? Probably everybody in this room, one time or another. Before we put in the intelligence system, we couldn't tell you why, because we didn't know what the incoming moisture of that module was. We didn't know what the incoming trash of that module was. We didn't know any of those things. Today, we know it. It's recorded. And I can go right back to that module and say, well, you know, you had 15% trash coming in here. What's the problem? The next guy over here had 7, you know, or your moisture was 17%. The next guy's was 6, you know. So there's a lot of things that we can do there. We, last year at our Hilgi Gin, we couldn't afford to do everything, so we went with our split 8-foot overhead in there. We had split 6-cylinder incline cleaners over stick machines and incline cleaners over our conveyor distributor, all 6 cylinders. So we had a total of 24 cylinders in the gin. We decided that we need more cylinder cleaner, especially with the hairy leaf varieties that we're seeing today and the way some of the cotton's coming into the gin. So basically, we went in this year and installed 12-foot horizontal cleaners, split 12-foot horizontal cleaners, coming off our dryers, and with 3-cylinder stick machines underneath. And in our second stage, we have 9-cylinder, split 9-cylinder inclines. And what that did, that went from that changed what we were doing from, and I just figure in feet of rollers or horizontal cleaners and stuff, 256 feet to 504 feet of rollers. And that really made a difference and seemed like we really cleaned up cotton a lot. My biggest problem now is the is trying to do something with the seed nips and seed that are going through the lint cleaners. We also had to increase our air, and that's so important that you got plenty of air and plenty of heat to gin the cotton you want to gin. And I will tell you this, that any sheet metal guy you get, seems like every single one of them is trying to prove the other one wrong or the gin manufacturer wrong. And it's and if you just don't really ride herd over it, most of you know you can get some pretty crazy things. We let some things slip by last year that we're going to have to change, and paid good money for them to come in wrong or not like we wanted them to be. But and then at the same time, we didn't get our sheet metal till September, and we started ginning in October, August. So quite a bit. Varieties, as we talked about, a pretty tough deal. We also put in the King Mesa humidifier and the Tex-Mex moisture sensor on the bale. And I think it's so important to get that moisture right in that bale and make sure you're staying around that below 7.5%. But you know, we like to target for about 6-8, and those machines talk to each other and keep that done. That really increases our turnout percentage, and also that helps the producer, and at the same time it helps our press. I think this thing is zero, so I'm supposed to get it.
No, we did. I didn't.
Oh, we got it going. Okay, man, you've been scaring me, man.
A lot of respect.
The Ooster Intelligence system basically samples the cotton coming in the gin at the module feeder, takes a picture, takes a moisture, has pad samplers that grab the cotton and flow. We can look at that picture, and that's on our console. It tells us what the incoming trash was, what the incoming moisture was. It helps us regulate the heat coming in, but we use the moisture mirror to do that. After we go through our pre-cleaning, takes another sample right before going to the lint cleaners, and does that about every 15 seconds throughout the day. And so you can see a bale gets tested multiple times. It tells us what we did in the pre-cleaning portion of our gin, and also communicates with the valves on our stick machines and lint cleaners to, if we don't need that particular stick machine to run, it'll bypass it automatically. If we don't need but one lint cleaning, it'll bypass the lint cleaners automatically. And this is so neat for me because I'm in the office, and our cooperative is large, and we've got grain elevators and cotton gins and cotton warehouses and farm supply stores and agronomy divisions, so it's hard for me to keep a watch on what's going on the gin at all time. And I really like what IntelliGen does for us. Our producers, I think Ooster charges us $20,000 per gin and $235 a bale. Our producers pay that. They can elect to use IntelliGen or not. About 90% of our producers use it. The only ones that don't use it are the ones that want their money back from the National Cotton Council. And y'all, we all got some of those. Anyhow, the last thing we did, I think, that really helped the efficiency of our gin is fires. And how many of you had fires in the gins? I know it's a big problem. Last year in our Dannemang gin, we had numerous fires throughout the year because we had some things not right. And so we put in the Argus fire protection system. I'm proud to say this year we ran the whole year without stopping for a fire more than 10 minutes, and last year it was half a day, and one couple of times it was dang near all day cleaning up after a fire. So that system really, really helped our efficiency, and I don't know what it does to the quality of the cotton, but there's a lot less fire bales and a stack out there. And I'll sit down and let some of these other guys talk, but those are some of the things we're doing. Thank you.
Real good, Jim.
All right. Good job, Jimmy. All right, Dwayne Alford from Yuma, Arizona. You cold gin? Tell us what you did, Dwayne.
Thank you, Richard. I'm going to really speak on behalf of not just my gin, I guess, but the summary of gins in Arizona. And I don't have a lot to say because we're very fortunate in that in our area with our environment, our quality of cotton, for the most part, is very good. And, you know, we're shooting, hoping for most 1121s with one or two leaf. Of course, you know, there's not a differentiation between one or two. You know, what really, we don't have any gins at this point that have the intelligent systems. We have the ginner intelligent system where the ginner is just watching things as closely as possible. And with the last few years where we've had the issue of, you know, lint cleaners, what do we do there? Do we run two? Do we run one? Are we better off having less lint cleaners? I think everybody in Arizona pretty much runs one lint cleaner unless they, you know, come into some cotton that necessitates two. And we usually know that just right from looking at the modules, you know, on the module feeder, or they're identified in the yard even before they get there. So again, we're really fortunate out west. I think California is even included in that, New Mexico for the most part. And that, you know, we just, with our ability to defoliate and with good weather, you know, it hasn't been something that's been at the top of everybody's investment list when you're looking at what to do with to your gin next. Now, this year in my area, I wish that we would have had one of these systems perhaps, because we had more rain than we've had in my history at the gin the last 10 years. And we had more 31s than we've ever had by probably four or five fold. But that was just a function of several rain events right at just prior to harvest, when 80%, 90% of the cotton was open. And, you know, it just was a timing issue there. And so that affected our color, and our leaf grades were worse than they have been in the past. We ran two lint cleaners a little bit more than we have in the past as well as a result of that. So. You know, we have the fire suppression. I do know of, Russ, correct me, I think there's one gin in Arizona that I'm aware of that has just put that in and speaks very highly of it as well. That's something that we've looked at as well. Again, that's not a quality issue, but that's just more of a keep the gin going issue, and we're all about that as ginners. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, but again, I guess from the out west, we're just fortunate that we have great quality cotton to begin with, and because of our weather.
I've got a couple of those 21s, I think, in the last 10 years. All right. Next panel member, Jonathan McBride from Holly Bluff, Mississippi. Come on, Jonathan. Good job, Dwayne.
I'll try to be brief as well. There's probably a considerable amount of information that I could include here that you'll run into a little bit later, that Ross Rutherford with Lomas Corporation will be providing some presentation on some field evaluations that we had this past fall. Let me just give you just a brief background. I'm again with Silver Creek Gin. This gin was built in 2001 there in Holly Bluff, Mississippi, so kind of there in the heart of the Mid-South. 2001, if you recall from some of the first slides that we saw this afternoon, that was at the peak of cotton production there in the Mid-South, pretty much. And at that time as well, some of the concerns for the market were along the lines of what Mr. Mayfield was looking for. You know, we built the gin. We've got actually two 4-2 Lomas 170 gin plants in one building, Premier Dorless Presses. We put just a single stage of Sentinel lint cleaners behind each gin stand in 01. And for the first, about as it coincided with that first slide presentation, those years of production, that seemed to fit just right in line with what we needed. But as some of the markets and the crops began to shift in our portion of the world, the market began to ask for slightly better cotton than what it had seen coming from the Mid-South, I would say, especially in those years. And so we began, as well as that, we began to see a shift in some of our harvest practices. And as Dr. Valco mentioned, I think that there's still quite a bit that's going to be learned about some of these round bale handling practices, as well as storage, and effects that it may or may not have on cotton quality. There's a lot of education that still needs to be done, both, I believe, for the ginners and for the producers as well, to help maximize and maintain the quality of the cotton that's contained within those modules. So at any rate, some of the first things that we did, the leaf grade began to become a concern along 07, 08 years. We added a lint cleaner there in a second stage in a B position to try to accommodate for some of that. Over the years, it became apparent that the animal we might more need to fight, and I think most of you ginners would agree with that, is to try to get whatever material out prior to the gin saw, the gin stand, that you can. And we were seeing considerably more there across a few years, amounts of, I'll say foreign matter, not speaking of plastic or anything like that, but we'll just say trash, sticks, burrs, those type things coming down the feeder apron. And so we began to endeavor to remove those items and to keep that from being chopped up in the gin stand and put through the lint cleaners. And in 2011, I have two plants, so that provides for, I guess, some experimentation along the way. On the north plant, we stacked feeders over our gin stands. So we had 2 700 feeders over the gin stands and began to see a lot of great results from that and the way it fed into the gin stand, and also as well as the amount of material that was being taken out of the cotton. And just for some numbers sake, for some information, we'll just put it that way, the top feeder and the bottom feeder both remove, they're pretty close on the amount of trash that is taken out, burrs and sticks, fine trash as well. You're going through an incline over a two-saw stick machine, obviously, through those feeders. But it's really impressive as to how much material will come out of those feeders. We ran that layout, the 11 crop and the 12 crop. 12 crop showed us some more concerns that we had to fight. I'm certain that many of you will agree, especially in those parts of the world where moisture is more of a concern and more of a potential, that no 2 years are ever exactly alike, it seems. Everyone has their own problems or their own unique needs and requirements. But the 12 season was, and USDA, I think, would verify what I'm about to say, was a higher occurrence of some bark and some extraneous matter in bales in the 2012 crop. And at least we saw that at our gin. And that was something that we began to try to take care of too. Combined with, guys, when you're talking about 2011, you're looking at some of these exact same things that I'm sure we're all facing them that we've seen today. Plastic contamination, trying to keep that from going through the gin process, trying to keep oil contamination at a minimum as technology has gotten better and better for the mills to detect what we know has pretty well always been there. But we begin to see some of these foreign matter, extraneous matter in some bales, and we learned several things there. We tried some different things and we learned some different things, guys. And through the cleaning arrangement that we had installed in 2011, there was considerably less bark instances on that particular gin than it was on the gin that had only a single stage of feeders. So that was an indication of the route we needed to take as well. Also, seed coat fragments were higher across our region in the 12 crop season, and some things we learned through that was, and many thanks to USDA as they helped us in working through those issues, as we saw those higher instances, to try to maintain that integrity of that bale for both the markets and for the producer to maximize his return. You know, guys, if you keep up with some of the contracts for some of your producers, if you're not a producer yourself, there are some contracts out there that will not accept cotton bales that have certain extraneous matter or certain amounts of extraneous matter. So it is an important thing for us to keep up with those things as well as we try to maintain the marketability of U.S. cotton. But one of the key things that we learned, and I'll just say it to you like this, was that within your gin stands, maintaining a good, smooth roll box design is key. Going forth from there, the 2013 crop, the crop that we just ginned, our acreage was down significantly again this year. But in trying to be proactive to some of these varieties that we've seen, and many of these 5288s and 5458s, the 499s that you've seen flashed up here, and some other varieties that I would dare say or the hairy leaf varieties or the semi-smooth leaf varieties, which I think even as this data show probably tend more to the hairy leaf characteristics, trying to help maintain that product for our producers, because the bottom line is that many of those varieties yield such that though they result in a higher leaf grade, the producer actually profits more and puts more money in his pocket. The bottom line is better by planting those varieties. So those varieties are going to be around to stay for many of us, guys. And so trying to establish a method in which to maximize the turnout of that product, as well as to give the best leaf grade possible, the best meal characteristics needed possible, is where we've tried to go. And that's what we've tried to do, is we've tried to put in the equipment necessary to do that without causing fiber damage, and also to address certain market requirements. So in the 13 crop, we tried a few more things, and I say try. Obviously, that we didn't try. We had some soul searching, and we had some good thoughts that this was exactly what we needed to do, and thankfully we were blessed, and it turned out to be just that. In the 13 crop, and I don't want to say too much again, because Ross has got a real good presentation to show us here just a little bit later of some of his field evaluation. But we stacked feeders on the other side of the gen. Through the 11 and 12 crops, we learned that those themselves gave us about a half to three quarter leaf grade total better product. And so we stacked those on the other gen as well. And also we still seem to have some burrs and some sticks that need to be taken out. So we swapped our two soft sticks for threes. And guys, that's done a lot for our operation, and has helped to take some of the things that our producers are seeing and are doing, guys. Is just, we're all trying to do more with less. I think we'd all agree with that. And plastic contamination, trying to do more with less, to have the eyes there and what needs to be on board to solve those problems before they become problems, is something that we're striving to try to do. We have growers who, you know, we talk about our defoliation practices, and we have so many guys, especially these round bale pickers, they want them in the field, they want them rolling. So many instances, we're only waiting maybe 10 days or so from defoliation to harvest. We're not given that 14 days plus in many instances. So we're having to try to address some of these circumstances, and I'm sure that many of you are seeing some of the same things. And trying to do this through equipment that will least degrade the fiber quality as possible is what we've tried to look at, again, before it gets to the gen stand. And I know I'm probably way over my time already. I'm always long-winded. There's much more that I could say, but maybe if you'll stick around, we'll share some more of these things with us just a little bit later. Let me give some other gentlemen the opportunity to speak. Thank you.
Very good, John.
Anybody have some questions?